WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are celebrating 25 years of fun around here. I'm wearing my Fadley's shirt. It's true. We'll be at Fadley's next Friday. Lexington Market, we're going to be joined by Coppin State President Dr. Anthony Jenkins, as well as Larry Stewart. We are their flagship, have been their flagship for a decade now, so we're celebrating that as well. Maybe Ruffin will come down for a crab cake. We'll be doing all that. But between here and there, we got football. We got baseball. We've got East Street Band. We got things happening. We got pennant races. The Orioles are on the West Coast. Luke Jones joins us now. He has been up late. He will be up early and out in Owings Mills all week long, asking questions on behalf of you, the fans. Luke, what's going on, man? This is an interesting time. Every night I go to bed, I'm, you know, the Orioles playing late. The Ravens getting going. We got kickoff 48 hours from now with the Lions and NFL Network. They're going to have concerts. So we're probably going to hear from Roger Goodell. This intersection of baseball and football, I know you've been doing this 15 years, this energizes you. It energizes everyone I know, everyone who's ever supported the radio station, because we all love sports, and we want it to be this good every night.
There's no question about it. And there's only been a few years where this intersection has happened. I mean, let's face it.
I didn't even shave. Look, man, I'm all gray.
Yeah, the early years for the Ravens, while the Orioles were good in 96 and 97, didn't happen then. We know the 14 straight losing seasons for the Orioles. You know, you had it in 12 and 14 and 16, but, you know, even that was very fleeting. So to be in this position, and not talking about an Orioles team that is trying to hold on to a wild card or trying to sneak into the playoffs, which is where they were last September, which was fun, but they weren't there just yet. I mean, you're talking about a team that's 35 over 500 at the end of business on late on Labor Day night, a team that has its biggest lead in the AL East that we've seen since late July, where they pushed it up to, you know, as much as 3.5. I mean, life is good. You look at this race, the way that it's playing out, you know, Tampa's still there. The Rays haven't gone anywhere. Give them credit for how they've played since that big series down at the Trop in late July. But it's going to be the Orioles for the Rays. Whoever wins the division is going to be the top seed. I mean, that's, they've separated, and maybe the AL West, you know, they've cannibalized each other a little bit.
What I would say is seeing bad teams, when you're seeing good teams versus the Rockies or the White Sox or the what's left of the Angels. I mean, 5 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, they're making deals thinking they're in. Otani's arm's falling off by the time they get out. I mean, this is a different version, and this is really a cautionary tale. And I, you know, I will bring this up in every baseball segment, that the Mets thought they'd be good. The Padres felt like they had everything going for them. You know, the Yankees and Red Sox probably didn't think they were going to have great years, but thought they could win 90 or 95 games because of their pedigree. And then you see these other clown acts like the Angels that never had any pedigree, sort of trying to will themselves with two of the greatest players on earth, Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, into the postseason without pitching, without defense, without other players, without anything. And it's a cautionary tale for where that depth is as Jackson Holliday makes his way down to Southern Virginia, and where that pipeline would be as to whether you're a good team or whether you have a couple of good players or whether you signed Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and, you know, whether you have payroll or whether you don't. You know, the Orioles are doing it on the field, not in the offseason, not at the winter meetings, not at the trade deadline, not on MLB Network. They're doing it 9 innings at a time. Sometimes it's, you know, rubber bands and paper clips and bubble gum, and sometimes Kyle Gibson sucks. But all of this promise, and you and I have been talking about Grayson Rodriguez for like 3 years, that they're now in a real pennant race with real players, real pile divers, like this O'Hearn cat that just feels to me like a Buck guy. You know what I mean? Like, or a Steve Pierce, you know what I mean? Like, just a guy that like really wants it and has been in hell for a while. All these guys have been in hell. None of these guys have won anything. So this feels good and it's fun. And I'll tell you this, this is where I get off over the weekend. I mean, I was like Fred and Barney with toothpicks in my eyes trying to stay awake for these Diamondbacks games. And the people that were at the stadium looked like they were half awake and they were getting their ass kicked early the first night and the place felt lonely. I said to my wife, Google the temperature in Phoenix because I've been there. I know what it's like when it's a buck 14 when you leave your hotel. It wasn't. It was only 95, which is like 70 in Phoenix, right? But I thought, man, this is sleepy. The night I did the Give a Spit tour there was 118 degrees that night. And I walked over with a Q-tip and swabs into a 71-degree building. People don't want to play baseball. They want to take a nap. They want to read a book. You know, like, and it's hard to play like that. You know, when you're up and you're down and you're winning and you're good and they stink and you're out there and it's hot. I worried for them going west that they could not stay focused, but just these games have been sleepy, dude. You got to admit, these last four games didn't feel like a playoff game.
Well, sure, especially when you're playing teams. I mean, you mentioned the Angels. I mean, Shohei Ohtani was supposed to play on Monday night and ends up getting scratched because he's dealing with an oblique issue now, on top of knowing he has a torn UCL, on top of knowing that he is extremely likely to be a lame duck in terms of being with the Angels and leaving.
And who's going to give him money when he's broken in two, right?
Oh, he's going to get money. He's going to get money.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, oh, he absolutely will. It's just going to be a matter of whether it's $500 million or $450 million, you know, whatever it ultimately is. But the point is, you're right when you're talking about the Angels, which, I mean, they just put all these guys on waivers over the last week. And what happened there with Cleveland picking up some guys and the Reds picking up some guys and the Orioles putting in some claims. But obviously, when you're the best team in the American League, you're pretty low on the list. So not
you wait your turn and you take your Jorge Lopez and you tell romantic stories.
Yeah, right. And, you know, because you're trying to figure out how to bolster your bullpen down the stretch, even though I want to emphasize Jorge Lopez not eligible for the postseason. So this would be more of a help them the next 3 weeks and then next year, if you're not going to have, especially if you're not going to have Felix Bautista. So I think you look at the Orioles, though. You just laid it out. You just named a number of different teams with different circumstances, but all those teams that you mentioned, other than a couple, they all had some semblance of expectation this year. You know, whether you're talking about high payroll teams like the Mets, a combination of high payroll and young talent like the Padres. You know, I can recall when Machado signed with San Diego, you and I talking about this at the time, they were the Orioles in terms of having this fantastic farm system and looking at them and saying, wow, they're going to be really great. And look, yeah, they made the playoffs last year. But they've probably been, for my money.
They had their fun. I mean, like, at this point, it feels that way, right? They've had their fun.
I mean, it's not over, but it is for them this year. And that's probably the lesson to take there is you just don't know how a season's going to play out. And as much as this is exciting for the Orioles, and as much as you look at this thing from a farm system perspective, from a club control perspective, putting aside John Angelos' payroll for just a moment, just looking at the young talent they have, you look at it and say, wow, they've got a chance to be good here for quite a while. You know, these guys aren't close to free agency just yet, other than, you know, Santander, let's say. But you know that not everything's going to go perfectly every year. And that's not to say it's gone perfectly for the Orioles this year. And that's why it's such a credit to them, because it hasn't gone according to plan. I mean, Grayson Rodriguez, yeah, he's had a sub-3 ERA since returning after the All-Star break, but we know how that went earlier in the season. We know how it went for DL Hall this year. We know how it went for Ryan Mountcastle for, what, the better part of about 2 months, where he just wasn't right and had the vertigo and all that. So it's not as though this season has gone perfectly for them. However, their ability to compartmentalize and, what, 84 straight series now without being swept, which is just... that's crazy when you think about that. I mean, even the best teams in baseball on a yearly basis get swept a couple times. But it really just speaks to their ability to minimize those slow times. I mean, I just mentioned in a piece at BaltimorePositive.com on Labor Day, I said, this seems like an appropriate time to recognize the work the Orioles have put in over the last 5 months and going into a sixth month now. But, you know, I can recall on the 4th of July, I was at the beach and the Orioles lost 6-7. And all I saw on social media was this season's falling apart. It's unraveling. And what did they do immediately after that? They reel off a winning streak. They're back in position at the All-Star break. And then what, a week and a half later, they were in first place in the AL East, and they have been since then. So it really just speaks to the workmanlike demeanor that they've had all year. And even when things haven't gone well, and My goodness, you lose Felix Batista. Of all the players they have, having good seasons and all-star caliber seasons, they really only had one guy that was having a historic kind of season. And that was Felix Batista. When you look at the strikeout rate, ERA, even go into nerdier stats like win probability. I mean, this guy had the best win probability by a pitcher, you know, in terms of added to his team success of anyone in baseball. And he gets hurt. And guess what, Nestor? Look at their record since he went down. And I get it. They haven't had the toughest schedule over the last week and a half, but they haven't missed a beat in that way. And that's not to say that they won't miss a beat. It's not to say that they're not going to miss Batista, because
Yeah,
they
they're going to
absolutely
lose a
will.
game or two because they don't have him, and they just need to make sure it's not game six.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is, they haven't flinched though. They haven't blinked. There hasn't been any sense of, oh my gosh, what the heck are we going to do? Yennier Cano stepped into the ninth inning, and other guys have pitched well out of the
You got to
bullpen
make
since
sure that on
then.
October 10th you're not talking about Felix Bautista because he's gone. Right? I mean, it's like anyone else that's it's like talking about Marlon Humphrey this week. It is just like he's not playing. So let's figure out who is playing. And you know, that's where being around ball coaches, not lately, but all my life, you know, I sort of picked that up and you play with what you got. And in this particular case, seeing Bradish, seeing Rodriguez, things that we would not have said are is in June. And maybe in June we felt like Yennier Cano wasn't is. We certainly knew Bautista wasn't is, right? But what the might be's would be Colom, you know, the whole left-handed side of the bullpen. You know, take all of them. I don't think any of us looked at that in May and June, even when they were 15 games over 500 and 2 games out of first place, or you know, 10 games over 500, wherever they were at any point to look at their pitching. We've always worried about how we were worried about their pitching 5 weeks ago, and they're getting Jack Flaherty, right? I'm not saying I'm not worried about their pitching, but they do more on a nightly basis, not necessarily the nights that Gibson or Flaherty's pitching. And I don't know that Cole Irvin's a real thing, but he might be a real thing to get you from the fifth to the seventh inning in game three. And that's a hell of a thing to have. And that's the way my mind works now. And you know what's weird, Luke? You watch a lot more baseball, even in the postseason, than I do, but I think you can go look at my social media. I think my wife and I became a slave to it last October, like the World Cup. Once it started, we were like watching the 1 o'clock game. It was just sort of on all day, and we're watching it and just watching pitchers go 3 innings in games and them using the long reliever in a different role and using lineups differently and playing for one run and just. And now you take the shift out of it, you put the pitch clock in it, you put fans being really loud and maybe making pitchers do things that old quarterbacks used to do, which is screw up and it costs them balls in a 2-2 count because you get crazy. Like things like that are going to play into this. But more than that, I don't know, man. It's Labor Day. I don't hate their pitching. You know, could it be better? Yeah. Have I seen better? Sure. But who else has got? Who are we playing? Who? I mean, who are we playing? And what are they going to have that's better than what I've seen over 120 games so far with this team?
Yeah, and to your point, yeah, you look at the pitching and you're not fearful of it if you're the opposition, but go look at what their numbers have been since the All-Star break. They've pitched really well overall. And I get it. I mean, Flaherty's been a disappointment. Gibson's either been really good or really bad. It's kind of been this real hot or cold thing for him over the last 5 weeks or so. But Kyle Bradish, I've said it before, since April, when he had the weird April, he took the comebacker off his foot in his very first start. He lands on the IL. That's the reason why Grayson Rodriguez was in the majors, you know, as quickly as he was, you know, because the Orioles had recognized he wasn't quite right, you know, during spring training. And we talked about that. But, you know, Bradish goes down and he's right back there. But, you know, Bradish since April has very much pitched like an ace. Grayson Rodriguez, since returning in July, has very much pitched like at least a top half of the rotation kind of guy. Dean Kramer, who, you know, we all saw what Dean Kramer was 2 years ago and what a disaster that was. Now he has been more consistent of late. So you look at this through the lens of what you were just talking about, thinking about this in terms of postseason and ramifications and, you know, already starting to envision roles. You know, I feel pretty good about those three guys in my rotation. Now, who my fourth guy is going to be, that's where I don't know. You'd like to think, or not even if you like to think, but if you're just thinking like Brandon Hyde would think, probably would like it to be Kyle Gibson because he does have some veteran experience, but he's got to pitch well enough to warrant that. Flaherty, who knows? I mean, it's been very underwhelming. You're starting to wonder if, you know, if he's on the postseason roster, he might be that guy that comes in the fourth inning. Because the reality is, unless you're an ace, unless you're a Verlander, Scherzer, you know, go down the list. Atlanta's
dude, you get
pitchers,
no leash in the postseason. If Bradish goes out in game one and stinks and they're losing five, the one in the third inning, they will pull him and they will bring him back for four, right? Like, it's just different, right? Like, how all of that stacks up to where a Flaherty would come into a game. You don't want him coming into a game that's on fire. If you're in the fifth inning and it's tied, he won't be the guy you'll go to, right?
Well, and you just said it, though. It's not even going to be 5-1. You're talking 3-1, and he's probably out of the game. I mean, the reality is, other than those true bona fide aces, starting pitchers in the postseason, for the most part, you're kind of looking at them, can they get me through the order twice? You know, in the regular season, it's can they get me through the order three times, and then we'll kind of see after that. But can they get me through the order twice? And then after that, it's probably not going to be much more than hitter to hitter. So you're going to have that depth. But, you know, getting back to the point I was getting ready to make, John Means going to make one more start with Norfolk this week. He's pitched well. His pitch count is up there. You know, this isn't a guy who's only going out and throwing 40 pitches. I mean, his pitch count, I believe, got up to 80 or 85.
They're not grooming him to be Gosman, is what you're telling me. They're grooming him to pitch a game next weekend against Tampa and come in here and say, can you give us five innings in the big leagues and help us win a ball game?
Right.
And if you could do that in September, we all feel different about October. Dude, you and I in March were like, all right, let's pretend they're going to be good. Let's pretend they're going to be in the race. They're going to be a 90-95 win team. They're going to play meaningful games in September. Who's going to be on the team, right? Like, you and I were like, who's going to be on the team? Is Henderson going to make it, or is he going to fizzle? Because we had to think that way, that maybe he hits 208 and gets shipped out the way a lot of superstars have, the way Rodriguez did, came and failed. Right? Like, all of these, you know, Westberg's an interesting guy because he's a little Richie Dower for me. Feels like he's going to play 15 years in the big leagues and manage someday, but he might never hit 320 or be an all-star, but he's a guy you want on your team that you're just going to put. He might be that guy for me, but all of these pipeline guys, he's on the team. We were screaming for him. Stowers, I mean, has that awful thing happened last week, and I mean, he was up here opening day. He was the rage and the talk. Like, it's amazing how the narrative changes during the course of the season. But for this team to win a championship, the narrative was always going to have to be Rodriguez, Means. Their best players need to be available and pitching well, or some Jack Flaherty's going to have to come in on a boat and rescue them. And that hasn't happened. So it does feel to me, I feel like they're pitching, I'm more confident in their pitching today than I've been. And maybe it's because of what you're about to tell me with Means and these other people that they're coming along, but I don't think they're going to get beaten in October because their pitching stinks and they're going to be losing 7-1 in the fourth inning every night in the playoffs. And even if they are, I think they could score four runs in the fourth and three runs in the sixth. I wouldn't bet against this team. This team's shown me enough. I'm a believer. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, Luke. Really, I am.
I mean, they're 35 over 500, right? I mean, they're at a point now where they don't have to be much better than 500 the rest of the way to win 100 games, you know, which the Orioles haven't done since 1980. So, yeah, they deserve that benefit of the doubt. And look, I still don't want to downplay losing Felix Bautista. And I'm not suggesting that you're doing that either, because it is that tough to lose a talent like that, a guy that can come in, especially in a postseason setting, if he's healthy, which is a moot point now, because, you know, barring something completely unforeseen, we're not going to see him. And, you know, probably going to end up getting Tommy John or you know.
They're not sugarcoating this, right? They're just letting the swelling go down, and they're doing this textbook, which is and see. He's going to miss a year if we do this, so let's just let it settle down and see how it goes. It's not let it settle down and we'll get him pitching again, right? I mean, that's
– you wouldn't think so, right? I mean, that would be so – I'm not saying that's that scenario is impossible, but, gosh, that seems really unlikely. And – as much as everyone kind of views Tommy John like it's a tune-up, like it's a no big deal, go look at Noah Syndergaard, who just got released again. I mean, think back 5 years ago, 6 years ago, it wasn't just Jacob DeGrom with the Mets. It was DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard. You know, they had this 1-2 punch of these guys that had wizard-like stuff. They could throw 100 miles per hour, incredible breaking stuff. And Syndergaard had to get Tommy John a few years ago, and he's never been the same guy. He's never been close to the same guy. So my point in that is not to scare everyone who's listening right now thinking about Felix Bautista's future. The point is that even Tommy John surgery is serious. And if you happen to have a scenario, and look, I'm not saying that this happens often, although I do think of Tanaka, you know, the former Yankees pitcher who avoided Tommy John and ended up pitching a number of years, despite having an injury to his UCL. But considering Felix Bautista and the way that he throws and him being a power pitcher, yeah, it's difficult to avoid that. But to the point you made, and I've made this point as well, whether he gets Tommy John surgery today or it's a month from now, barring a miracle, he's not pitching next year. I mean, is there a scenario where he could come back in September or October of next year? Maybe, but most likely not. So you're looking at this and you need the inflammation to die down because MRIs and things of that nature, you know, you can miss, you know, you don't get the full picture if there's that kind of inflammation. But you know, really for the Orioles, it's preparing for life without him, you know, at the very least for the rest of this year. And then we'll see what happens after
What I
that.
said
But
about October in the very beginning is, look, if they're going to win the World Series, they need 11 innings. You know what I mean?
yeah.
They need a couple of wins and a couple of wins and a couple of wins and shut the door. And if they're winning by enough, it won't matter who's in there in the ninth inning if they're up 9-6, right? Like you'd like to think, right? So how many one-run games will they be in where they're ahead in the playoffs? Because they're going to lose playoff games too. They're going to get their ass kicked 9-2 in Houston one night or Seattle because that's the way this rolls. And it happened to Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux and John Smoltz more than it didn't happen, quite frankly, in postseason play. So I would just say for them, that specialized point where you get to the ninth inning and you need to get three outs, they have to figure out 8 to 10 innings in October, key innings, key outs, all of that, but it's still three outs. And it's the key three outs where the crowd's going to be leaning on you or leaning with you. It's going to mean everything. You just can't have a bedwetter out there throwing ball one, ball two, ball three, which is where have been with Fuji in a couple of instances, right? So no offense to Don Stanhouse, but and who will be a guest on the show sometime soon. But strike one. Just strike one. Literally in the ninth inning, strike one.
Yeah, but it's also going to have to be the seventh and the eighth, right? Because if Cano, and this is how we've seen it, this is how we assume it's going to be. Is it going to be Cano every single time in the ninth inning? Maybe not, but it's mostly going to be Cano. I think we're seeing how that's playing out. But the issue with this, and we talked about this last year after the Orioles traded Jorge Lopez and Felix Bautista slid into the ninth inning, what I would continue to point out is, okay, even if you feel okay about Cano in the ninth inning, just like Bautista in the ninth inning last year, the question became, all right, who's pitching the eighth to get to Cano? Who's pitching the seventh that would have been pitching the sixth before that? So it's everyone moving up on the proverbial ladder, you know, the pecking order in terms of high leverage. So that's where, you know, seeing DL Hall, solo homer aside that he allowed on Monday night in Anaheim, but, you know, we've seen DL Hall look good. Jacob Webb has been excellent since the Orioles acquired him off waivers from the Angels. I mean, his numbers weren't even that bad for Anaheim, but you know, he's come to Baltimore and yeah, they've made a couple adjustments and he's pitched really well. You know, we'll see. You mentioned Danny Coulomb and CNL Perez has looked like the CNL Perez from last year, really for the last, you know, kind of since the All-Star break. You know, that's how good he's looked. So it's not as though they don't have options. Now, the one thing I do want to point out, because we mentioned Jorge Lopez, and one thing I had noticed when they claimed him off waivers, Tyler Wells hadn't pitched since the same night that Bautista hurt his elbow. Tyler Wells dealing with a little bit of a tired arm as they've converted him to the bullpen. You know, it's not to say he's injured per se, but you're starting to wonder if that's going to be a real option for them in terms of is Wells, which some people had thought, okay, maybe he can be a high leverage guy for them. He did it a couple years ago when he was a Rule 5 pick. We'll see. You know, we'll see on him. He's got to get
Well,
back on
you
the
talked
mound.
about innings loads for all these guys from the beginning, and who knows where we are with Rodriguez, given how weird, all of that was for him to go to for any of these
Sure.
guys that have been up and down that haven't been in one role and with good health, for a long period of time, all of this is a you know, it's an adjustment, and it's an adjustment period, but they're winning. Luke Jones will be in Owings Mills all week long doing Ravens football. We are doing Orioles baseball late into the night. I'm trying to put a party together next weekend when Tampa's in town. I will not have I don't know. I have to come up with something for Rays. I'm doing the signs this week. It is our 25th anniversary. We're celebrating our WNST 25 Stories of Glory. Time will not dim the glory of your deeds. Ray Bachman celebrated with us last week down at Pappas Restaurant in Glen Burnie. We had a delicious crab cake. I had a delicious ahi salad thing that was unbelievably great down on Ritchie Highway. We also had Stuart Pittman, Anne Arundel County Executive, my friend Leslie Shreve, talking about productivity, which Luke, as an old school teacher, would say, the kids are back at school here. Luke, we lost Jimmy Buffett over the weekend. I haven't mentioned that on the air. I just said the kids are going back to school, and that's a line from When the Coast is Clear. So I was like, oh, boy, that's Jimmy. I have to figure out how many times I'm going to drop Jimmy Buffett lines without realizing I dropped them, only to say, oh, that's a Jimmy Buffett thing I say. Wow, that's kind of weird. So my ailing heart to everyone out there who's battling with that. I'm battling with it. My wife's battling with it. No more Merryweather nights. We have to figure out some other way to make it happen. So Luke's going to be watching baseball late into the night and football. Luke, anything else on your mind before we throw it to break? Because I know we're going to be talking a lot. John McClain's on this week. Dante Pastorini's coming on. I'm wearing my Oiler jersey. So I'm doing all my throwback stuff. This is it's fun. It's fun for you, right? You got enough energy? You ready for this?
Absolutely. And one last thing about the Orioles. Gunnar Henderson, we saw it again Monday night. AL Rookie of the Year tour continues. I mean, he's going to be Rookie of the Year at this point. I mean, he's been phenomenal. We've talked about it since mid-May. You going back to the last thing you said about what had to happen for the Orioles and what we thought about the Orioles back in April. It was Adley Rutschman, right? He was going to be their best player. And look, Adley's had a perfectly fine season. I'm not saying this to beat him up at all. Gunnar Henderson's their best player. You know, position player-wise, he's their most valuable
that
player.
That play he made the other night, wow.
I mean, right? Defensively, he's played a fantastic shortstop. You know, all this talk about Jackson Holliday, I mean, are we going to move Gunnar Henderson? Are the Orioles going to move Gunnar Henderson off shortstop? I mean, he's been really good defensively there. I mean, and he's good at third as well, but boy, with the bat, he's 22, and he's got another level. I mean, I don't see how he doesn't have another level. He is exceeding every expectation, even from where he was a year ago. So a reminder, be patient with these young guys. Takes them a little while to get acclimated, but boy, not saying they're all going to be Gunner, but he is fun to watch on a nightly basis, and he just continues to come up big for them.
All right, the gun show's late night for the beginning of the week. Back into normal hours and some normalcy getting into the weekend as well as normal football beginning on Thursday night. Kickoff, Terps played, Towson. It's fall. It's here already, and then it's 120 degrees outside. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson Baltimore, and we never stop talking Orioles baseball and Baltimore positive. Stay with us.